Welcome to the Talk Policy Podcast. I'm Ashkan Kazarian. Today, we welcome Federal Communications Commissioner Michael O'Reilly, who recently has discussed the need to revisit the notorious FCC KidVIT requirement that requires broadcasters to air at least 3 hours of educational programming for kids per week. Commissioner, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So why did you get interested in this space? Why do you think we need to talk about it more?
So I think there's an obligation for the commission to review all of its regulations that's on its books. In this space, we haven't looked at our regulations since 2006. And so that's many years of change. The marketplace has changed tremendously since then. You see all the different programming that's available for video consumers, and especially in the children's space. So I think it's high time that we review our rules to see if they still match the burdens that we ask of broadcasters.
Let's dive into the rules. So what kind of rules do we have right now on the books?
Well, in addition to 3 hours per week on average, you have an obligation as a broadcaster to do programming that's regularly scheduled, that's 30 minutes in block, and that it air between the hours of 7 a.m. and 10 p.m.
So let's say it has regularly means every Saturday from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m., there has to be Sesame Street on?
The programming that's scheduled for that slot has to be on. And if you disrupt that, you've got to go through a rigmarole and a bunch of hoops to reschedule it.
So one of the main burdens would be the preemption part of it. Do you mind explaining to our listeners what it is? Because a lot of them are not policy wonks like us.
Sure. So if you're a local broadcaster and you have this obligation of 3 hours per week, and it's mostly on Saturday mornings, and you have a live event such as the Olympics, you've got to figure out how to slice that into your current programming. Well, if it disrupts your KidVIT block, you've got obligations and burdens in terms of relocating that to some other time period. And you're actually, we're talking to a broadcaster that had to plan 6 weeks in advance for preemption for an event. And that made the entire process incredibly complicated. And at no point would the family know where that the content was to be, even though that was the intent of the rule. So we've really complicated the situation and not helped any families in the process.
So if, let me get this straight, if a broadcaster moves children's programming to another day because there's Olympic event that they're airing, legitimate reason, do they have an obligation to advertise when?
They do, and they have to try and find a second home for that channel or for that programming, but it's hard to do when you've already got other programming going on. So it's like you don't have free slots from a broadcasting perspective. So you've got to then pre-plan it, and it makes the entire schedule that much more complicated. And we've made it, we really tried to prevent them from inserting and having any type of preemptive authority.
What are the repercussions for not doing that?
So the statute ties it to your license renewal. So a broadcaster is potentially putting their main asset at risk if they don't meet this obligation.
Any other regulations that are, so is there, for example, what if a broadcaster has different levels of channels? Is there a specific requirement to have the programming on one of that channels?
So the three-hour rule carries through to the different multicasting channels. Mm-hmm. It basically prevents them from trying to carry certain content on some of their secondary or tertiary channels.
So this NPRM that just became publicly available, by the way, thank you for all the transparency your commission has been doing so far. What questions are you guys asking?
So first, I got to compliment the chairman for making these documents available. It's something I've been pushed for a long time. It actually has been very successful in making sure that people have the opportunity to review all the documents that we have before we get to vote in a couple of weeks on this matter. So in particular, we're going to ask a bunch of questions and scope through all the different elements of our current rules and have the public comment about whether we should keep the current rule or make changes to it to reflect the current marketplace and what's happened since our rules were enacted.
Now that you're going to ask us questions, what do you think there's going to be a lot of engagement and people are going to, who do you think is going to come to the table to discuss this?
Well, I think there's a lot of parties that are interested in the topic, right? As a family man myself, as someone who has kids, I'm interested in making sure the programming for my family is acceptable. I think many parents think the same way, and they're trying to figure out how to do that in the current environment. So there'll be a lot of interest, I think. I don't think it'll raise to the ultimate, as some of our other projects have, but I think it is important to the American people.
What about the implications of the laws and regulations that are already on the books? The programming for children, as far as the research we've done here at TechFreedom, hasn't even been that creative or well-targeted educational as it could have been. Do you think those regulations might be actually holding them back?
Well, there's definitely that argument to be raised, and I think we'll see a lot of comments on that point. There's definitely the other side of the equation that people would say this is that the statute itself is unconstitutional, or our rules are unconstitutional. So I think those things will have to be fleshed out in the conversation as part of our proceeding. But your point's well taken. We're trying to figure out how to get better programming to children, what's the best mechanism, and in our current structure, I believe, holds broadcasters back.
There is one big difference now compared to when these rules were mainly passed, which is the internet, the rise of the internet. Do you see the way the landscape changed in children's programming that can affect the regulation going forward?
Oh, absolutely. There's so many more over-the-top providers that provide numerous children's television programming, content that is mostly really valuable for families. My family takes advantage of that opportunity today. So many others do as well. That you add that combined with the plethora of cable, traditional cable channels that have exploded over the years to focus on children, you have a wide variety of options in the marketplace. Now, that doesn't apply to everybody, because there are some families without the resources to be able to afford that opportunity. And so we're trying to figure out how do we address our rules to reflect that point, that those families can't afford other options. And so we have, not only do you have the children's television obligations, but you have, you know, non-public television. You have the broadcaster in the community that has good content today, and they're going to only increase that as time goes on.
So you mentioned that some people don't have access to the internet or broadband, which I know the commission is also working to fix. What they can do right now, and how this regulations or potential future regulation can help them?
So the item that we put out is intended to provide a flexibility to the existing broadcasters while not undermining existing programming for children that don't have options. And one of the things that we're looking at is whether we take the kid programming that's on the main channel and put it to a secondary channel, and maybe make it a little bit broader and bigger, more opportunity in that sense, the imagination. So that's where we're going to take a ton of comment on this summer and see what the comments are from the public and where we should go with that. But it is an opportunity to expand what is available for those children that only have over-the-air programming.
How exactly would it help develop programming more if the broadcasters can put this content on secondary channels, hypothetically?
Sure. So there's a couple of things. One, we're going to take comment as part of this item, whether they're, and it's allowed under the statute, whether broadcasters would, in fact, sponsor programming on another channel, that they may group together and put all, you know, funding for an expensive programming option on one particular channel to be the kids' channel in a particular market is an option. It's something that's allowed for, as I mentioned, in the statute. And that doesn't operate well today. It's not, no one's taking advantage of that. And so we're going to try and flush that out a little bit and see if we can't make that actually work. But to your larger point, we're trying to figure out, you know, if the broadcaster can move the programming to the second channel, they can address some of the problems they have today in terms of preemption and addressing the fact that the community would like more live programming and more local events, and moving to the channel, moving the kids channel to the secondary or tertiary option, what should be those obligations and making sure that the parents know that it's been moved.
And I guess this is my question to you more as a parent and not
sure, a
commissioner, but wouldn't parents be able to decide for their children and switch the channel when they need? It feels like that requirement of having to have content on a very specific main channel, for example, doesn't make sense for children who are supervised. And if children are not supervised, God knows what exactly they're watching, and these rules are not going to really help them. That's at least my 26-year-old logic. I don't have children, so I wouldn't know. What do you think?
No, as a father, I think that's still consistent with my thinking. But you want to, you know, we're trying to match up the changes, take comment in a broad way as best we can. on a bunch of different elements, and this being one of them. And so there are different schools of thought. One is that we can provide more flexibility. Another is that we can get rid of some of the burdens, and we're just trying to find that right middle ground.
Some of our burdens are also very bureaucratic paperwork, if I'm not mistaken, right? Can you speak to that?
Yes, there's we certainly want broadcasters to comply with our rules, but to do so, we've enacted a number of paperwork burdens. Not only do they have to tell us what programming they previously showed, they got to tell us what programming they're going to show in the future, and they got to tell us in detail what the purpose of the programming was, and they got to file it quarterly, and then at the end of the year at the same time. So you're talking about multiple layers of paperwork and burdens by staff to focus on this, rather than spending time on programming and the rest of the station and content. And so we're trying to see if we can't, you know, narrow that quite a bit so they can avoid the burdens and costs of paperwork.
So as of right now, we've talked about how the rules that exist as of 2018 imply a lot of paperwork. They disturb plans for development of content. Am I right?
That's right.
And also they would, broadcasters wouldn't be able to plan more local news or some kind of programming aimed at the state or region level?
Yeah, no, we've had a number of instances where broadcasters have highlighted to us that they weren't able to do specials because of our kid vid rules, that they were blocked. You know, it just wasn't worth the burden of trying to get approval to sideline their block that they have for kid vid. So they decided not to air it. One was on opiates. They decided, you know, special on opiates, that they decided just to sideline that could have been helpful to the community. So there's programming that's not happening today that would be beneficial that our rules are blocking.
And we would assume also not only very important information for public health, but also stuff like, I know in Albuquerque, they do this, the big air balloon festival that my boss always balloon. Talks about. I'm sure they would have wanted to do a special on that, for example, on a Saturday morning. Instead of reruns of Sesame Street. I have nothing against Sesame Street, listeners, just FYI. So let's talk about people who would be critical of this rules, because there's always someone, you know, criticizing whatever initiative FCC comes up with. What do you think they would say?
Well, I think their concern is going to be that if you reduce the burdens, then broadcasters are going to go to the lowest common denominator. If you substitute it, it would be put in, you know, they would put infomercials, for instance, in its place and just try to make a quick buck. And we're trying to look through those, and that's why we're going to take comments on what kind of structure we should have if we were give this option to broadcasters.
So you're going to ask those questions and then, based on the feedback, see how you can balance the two interests?
Absolutely. It's our obligation under the American Administrative Procedures Act to take the comments from the public, and then we'll dissect them, analyze them, and make the best decision we possibly can, hopefully later this year.
So what's the timeline on this? You said later this year. Do you have any particular timeline in mind? Or?
Well, obviously, this document is available now. And people will make, you know, comments on whether we should change it before our official vote in July. And then we'll open that up to the public to comment and fully in terms of the exact contents. And they can, you know, submit all kinds of, you know, there'll be comment periods, the reply comment periods. And hopefully, based on that, we can make a decision. You know, my goal would be by the end of the year.
Then for the end, I also wanted to ask you, you mentioned infomercials and a fear of infomercials that might be something that arises from, you know, loosening up some of the regulations. Is there a way to address that concern?
Yeah, we'll see what the comments and what direction they go in. But we certainly will try and see, you know, if this is a path that broadcasters would like to go. We want to see what it's going to be filled in with, whether it's local or live events, trying to see if that's the substitutable material.
All right. So to wrap up, Commissioner, what do you want our listeners to take away from this episode? Do you want them to come comment or to read the NPRM?
Well, I want them first to know that we're trying to thoughtfully approach the issue of children's television programming and whether our rules should be changed. And then secondly, as they get the opportunity to look at the work that we're doing, to make some submit comments to the record for us to digest and see which way we should go on the item, hopefully later this year.
It looks to me, at least, that you guys are open to listening to every opinion and are not making any rash decisions. And we're very grateful for that transparent and very, I'd say, bipartisan, at least in my opinion, process. Commissioner, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Much
appreciated. We hope you'll be back with our great initiatives.
Absolutely.
For children and for adults. Adults are okay too.
Sounds great.
Thank you for joining us.
Much appreciated.
You can follow Tech Freedom on Facebook and Twitter at Tech Freedom. Please leave us a review so others can learn the show. Thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.